Moving on, item four, presentation from Temco on Stocks Plus Absolute Return.
Before we get Temco, we'll give it a couple of
Millman, thank you.
So we'll give you the quick context of what's going on here and why we're chatting with Temco. As the board may recall, earlier this year, Temco had a number of personnel changes and reorganized their investment committee. As a result of that, they were placed on the watch list and we conducted an on-site visit. I was there, Marty, you were there, Jerry Holcomb, and John Phillips. One of the issues that came up during that meeting was whether the scope of our investment guidelines was appropriate for our various products with PIMCO. One of the suggestions from PIMCO is we could take a look at a slightly modified version of the Stocks Plus program. You'll recall this is a short duration fixed income portfolio that then buys S&P 500 futures contracts. So we get synthetic exposure to the equity markets while maintaining the excess return generating power of PIMCO in short-term bonds. We have a fairly constrained version, which is their flagship Stocks Plus. They have Stocks Plus Absolute Return, which loosens some of the investment constraints, brings in some additional asset segments in emerging markets and high yield, and allows them to employ a wider duration band. Right now, we're in a very narrow band in the short duration portion. The Absolute Return expands that and actually includes possibility of doing negative duration in terms of market distress. So this is something that John and Jerry wanted Milliman to take a look at, and Milliman has taken a look at that.
Thank you. I thought it'd be easier to put it on the screen so that if there are questions, they went to a chart, that it'd be easier to point to a chart. We have a summary up front. To give you the very quick overview, Contra Costa's invested in Stocks Plus since September 2002, and it's got an objective of beating the S&P 500 by 70 basis points net after fees, so 0.7% per year is their target. The Stocks Plus Absolute Return product has a target of 2.75% after fees to beat the S&P 500.
Marty, you need to talk a little bit louder because you're not on the speaker.
Okay. I'll get close to the speaker, too.
Yeah.
Sorry about
good.
That. Yeah. So, current product since 2002, and it has a target to outperform by 70 basis points. Stocks Plus Absolute Return has a target of 2.75% per year outperformance. And we have a chart right here that shows the performance of the S&P 500, that's in the red. Stocks Plus, your current strategy, is in blue. So you can see some outperformance, but very close performance. And the Stocks Plus Absolute Return is shown there in green, so substantially more outperformance. Now, it does this in a bit different way than other managers would do. And basically, if I can go to my little chart here, if you give PIMCO $100,000, they'll take $10,000 and use that as collateral to buy futures to get you the profit and loss of $100,000 in S&P 500 exposure. So this gets you your stock market profit or loss. That leaves them 90% of it, $90,000, to go and invest in something else. And they invest in fixed income. That's their expertise. So as long as this investment gets a higher return than LIBOR, and then you have to earn their PIMCO fees, you get outperformance. So that's the process. This portion is held aside to get S&P 500 exposure. The rest is invested in fixed income.
So if you invested in LIBOR, which is not too hard to do, and the S&P futures, you'll get the same return as the S&P. It's a synthetic S&P portfolio, so their goal is to do better than that.
Do you all think this has performed well since 2002 relative to its statement about what it's designed to achieve? In other words,
after fees, it's delivered a little bit of value to you.
So that was my question.
In 2008, it didn't do anything for you.
Right.
Your chart there, is it before fees?
These are all after fees. I like to show things after fees. It's what you get.
Okay.
So if you look at the cumulative number, this is S&P. This is the Stocks Plus, so just slightly more, and then Absolute Return is quite a bit more. And if you want to just look at the outperformance, because really this product breaks it out essentially separately, this is your outperformance over the S&P. So you can see that for the Stocks Plus product, there's a little bit of outperformance, the financial crisis happens, and then, you know, this is generating performance from here, positive performance, but nevertheless, it's much less than the absolute return Stocks Plus product, which, you know, here it does have a larger loss. This drop is a bigger drop than this drop. Mm. So, you know, it does have high volatility, but over a longer period, you get outperformance. And
so, Marty, so do we have the green line or the blue? We have the blue line. Right. So the red line on this one, we don't have.
Right.
That's right.
That's what we're considering today.
Yeah. And this is only the outperformance piece. This is how much better than the S&P 500 that you do.
What is the significance of that 10%? Why is it 10, not 15 or 20 in that other chart?
This is different than a typical manager, because a typical stock manager will start with the S&P 500. They'll say, I like Oracle better than Microsoft. They'll sell some Microsoft. They'll buy Oracle. And as long as Oracle outperforms, they've added value, assuming that adds up to more than their fees are. This is a bit of a different process where they take roughly 10% of the capital, and that's held as collateral for futures. And the futures then give you the profit and loss on the S&P 500. So you're really separating the market, the S&P 500 market profit loss, from your outperformance. It's like they're two separate pieces.
We could take the collateral pool here, and really what we're doing is talking about a change in the collateral pool, change in the short duration fixed income. And we could layer on any one of a number of different futures exposures. We could layer on commodities futures exposures. We could layer on small cap futures exposures. We have to be talking about layering on S&P 500 because they're cheap, they're liquid, and that's part of our asset allocation that we're trying to fulfill here. But it's two separate independent decisions. What we're talking about today is, do we think PIMCO can appropriately manage our collateral pool with today's guidelines, or we would like to expand the guidelines? And the guidelines are 90% available. This is what they're investing in. The 10% that's withheld, that's what backs up the futures contracts. It's not available for PIMCO to manage. It's kind of, it's set aside in another little pool.
At the risk of getting overly complicated, when the market goes up, you get money back on top of your collateral. The 10% that you're held, if the market goes down, you have to come up with more money. So, but you keep it fairly constant at 10%, and then you have the rest to invest.
Yeah. Will? I understand that this is the benchmark they're using, is the S&P 500, but how does it compare in terms of like a fixed income benchmark weighted with the S&P 500 90-10?
It ends up being a bit different than that, because what you want to do here is get S&P 500 profit loss, and then you'd like to get something more than that. And this piece, this 10% piece, is just there for collateral to use futures to get the S&P 500 profit or loss. So that's what this part does. This other part you could invest in something else. You could invest it in hedge funds. You could invest it in any other asset category you want. In the case of the Stocks Plus product that you have now, this is invested in something just outside of money market. So it's pretty short duration. It's you know, very liquid. The Stocks Plus Absolute Return takes this 90% here and invests some of it in foreign market debt, some of it in less creditworthy investments. You know, not a lot, but there's some credit risk there. Mm-hmm. So the two things that you find in this pool for the absolute return product are, it takes a little bit more risk in credit related to stocks, and it takes a little bit more duration risk. And they can go positive or negative, but it's more sensitive to interest rates than the other product.
Have you guys compared it to a fixed income benchmark? I mean, how does it look on the chart?
Almost all the risk you're getting in this portfolio is from the S&P.
I see. Got it. Understood.
Yeah. They tied to the negative duration. Have they ever actually gotten to negative duration? And quite, how do you do that?
I someone from PIMCO here?
We have PIMCO ready to come in and present.
Actually, you know, I asked them that question, I think, the last time they were here, and they were able to answer it, but I forget what the answer is now.
I don't think they've ever gotten, they have the ability, but they've never gone that direction.
Yeah.
And the problem that we were having with Stocks Plus is when we originally invested in it, the yield curve was much steeper. So they didn't. So going from 3 months to a year, they were able to gain a lot more yield. But over time, the yield curve, as interest rates have come down, has flattened. So they need to go out farther on the yield curve to get that arbitrage difference between LIBOR and what they're able to invest in. So they have to add duration. They're also adding a little bit more exotic investments into this pool. But it's still a very constrained investment. I mean, it's
you could, another problem that they had was in 2008, LIBOR went up, so it was harder.
Right, LIBOR went up and everything else stayed flat, and that was a major problem. Yeah, and they were stuck with only being able to invest in the short term. So LIBOR actually touched or for a couple of days actually exceeded what their pool was paying. So.
Yeah, that's because it was being manipulated.
It was manipulated as well.
Sorry. That's a different issue. We can talk about another day.
Sorry.
So two quick questions. One, risk between the two products. More risky, what we're talking about here?
We're certainly introducing additional segments, and we're just introducing additional operational risk of having a wider duration band. I think Bob's comment was standard deviation has not been significantly different.
Okay.
Right. You get vastly the bulk of your standard deviation out of the equity market.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though you're taking a riskier fixed income portfolio on the 90%, the total risk, if you add it up, is still overwhelmingly from the stocks.
Okay. Second question is, since we're looking at making a change in allocation, should we be looking at other managers that play in this space? And how does this product compare to, or are there other managers that do this type of product?
Well, anybody who has a pure alpha product could layer that on top of S&P futures. It's not high tech to do the futures plus cash. Mm-hmm. But we think this is an extension of the existing product, so we don't think you have to go back and do a search.
Okay.
We can go ahead. If there's additional questions for Milliman, we can do that. Or it sounds like we're getting into more detailed questions. We can go ahead and bring PIMCO in and address the more detailed questions.
One thing is probably worth quickly showing is on a rolling 24-month basis, you'll find that for almost any 24-month period, that Stocks Plus has outperformed. Oxford Trade has outperformed Stocks Plus. It's a very small period where it didn't. But the trade-off for that is it does have a higher standard deviation. And that's this second chart, that in almost all periods, the absolute return product does have more variability. And the last thing I wanted to be sure to hit is...
But if you look at the 3% at the peak, and stock market is like 18%, and even that doesn't capture how much more risk you get from stocks.
And this is isolating just the variability of the collateral pool, so just the fixed income portion variability. The difference between 1% and 3% is not tremendous.
Are the fees that much different for this? If we were to
they're
make
higher.
The same, are the fees the same? No.
They're slightly higher. We're paying about 35 basis points now. The new product on a flat fee basis would be about 45 basis points. There's also performance fees, options for both products.
But with your recommendation, even with the more expensive product, we're getting a better rate of return.
Marty's analysis here is net of those higher fees. Yes.
Yeah. There's. Fees are an interesting question because usually you think of fees based on assets. You know, 40 basis points, 0.4% of the assets that you're managing. But in this case, and I think maybe in most cases, but especially in this case, you can divide it out and say, what are the fees I'm paying versus the outperformance I'm getting? Because there's a cost-benefit proposition. If I hire a manager and pay them a low fee, but they underperform, that's a bad choice. Yeah, that was a very bad choice. So here what I did was take the outperformance and compare it to the fee. And if you pay a dollar in fees, you actually get more outperformance for the absolute return product. So while the fee per assets is higher, the fee per outperformance is actually lower in almost all the periods. This goes back to 2011, because before that it's the financial crisis impact and things don't look good. But here it's actually pretty stable. So in a normal market, when you pay a dollar in fees, you're getting about $5 in benefits, and that means you get $4 after you pay the fees. So it's a pretty good proposition in terms of fees, even though it looks like it's higher.
That's so a really, it's a helpful analysis.
You get a little bit more in terms of fees, and you get, knock on wood, if the past is the same as the future, you get higher returns.
And I appreciate the graph because it really says it, but sort of esoteric to me, but it's like if you pay for a higher-end car, you're paying for the performance, even though you're also paying for the elan, if you will, of the car, as opposed to a car that you buy the Mercedes or you buy whatever other car kind of thing. You're paying more for the Mercedes, but you're getting better value and longer performance. I guess that's where I'm
We hope. That's, at least that's what Mercedes is selling.
Sure. I don't own a Mercedes.
That's what Mercedes says.
I never will.
I did put an example in the report. And so this goes back to us through and saying, well, what if you have a manager who invests $100 million and they're charging 0.5% a year, 50 basis points, and it's a good year? And so the manager is up 11.5% before fees. They take their fees. They're up 11%. And so you're a happy camper. But how much money did the manager add? Well, they didn't add all 11%. The market gave you 10.
Right.
The manager gave you 1%. And so it's important, I think, to divide out the two.
Right.
The money that the market makes, you don't want to give credit to that to the manager. Right. They didn't make that. But the outperformance, they did. And so,
yeah, I thought that was a really and it may have been in all your prior reports, but I certainly glommed onto it in this one, and I just thought that the premium above market, when you can actually break it down and figure out what it is, that's really helpful for us to know. I appreciated that,
Marty. I want to thank you because it gave me a real clear picture between Stocks Plus and the absolute return.
Yep,
Stocks Plus. This is a good report for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we talk a little bit about the performance fee as opposed to the flat fee?
Do you want to do that now, or do you want to hear about... It's almost two separate discussions. It's one, right. Would you like to engage the new collateral pool? And if so, what fee makes sense? But I want to get the question answered for the board. Do you want to make this change? We're happy to go there as well. But
Are they just here to convince us to make the change?
Yeah. They're here to answer your questions, right. Honestly.
I've got one.
Either works for you.
No, I know, and I'm getting more. I like this conversation.
Okay. Let's keep this conversation going.
So, assuming we go with the absolute strategy, I mean, historically, we've never done a performance fee-based arrangement. Would it make sense in this?
Well,
I mean, this is a fairly interesting.
I would counter that saying performance-based fees are very standard in what we do in real estate and private equity. We haven't done it in the public equity markets. From an alignment of interest standpoint, it makes sense to me, provided they're structured appropriately. There's no point in paying higher fees for mediocre performance, and Marty's example there is great. You know, if the market's up 10%, that's great. That's wonderful. I'm not paying for that. Mm-hmm. And performance-based fees start to move you in that direction. Let's not pay on an asset management fee, on a hard fee, you pay for that because you're paying a percentage of assets. So if the market moves your assets up, you're paying a percentage of that move. We don't get away from that completely here, but on performance-based fee, you pay a small management fee and you pay a percentage of the carried interest of the excess returns above the market. In our analysis at staff level, basically, we're saying kind of the break-even point there is about 2.25% of excess return. If they don't deliver 2.25% of excess return, we come out ahead on the performance-based fee. If they deliver above that, we come out ahead on a flat fee basis. If PIMCO can deliver 2.25% above the S&P 500 on a consistent basis, I am more than happy to pay them a higher fee because we are earning a much better return outcome. If they don't get to that point, our downside is somewhat minimized in that we know that if they're not hitting a higher bogey, we're going to be paying something smaller than the 45 basis points that they're proposing on the absolute return strategy. We're, you know, potentially as low as 15 basis points, which would be the management fee under the performance-based fee structure.
If PIMCO delivers 150 basis points, they won't make their performance fee. You'll actually save money, and you'll be happy as clams.
What's been the historical?
About 2.25.
Shocking. Karen and Gary.
I know from our other products there's a time frame. So if we were to make this shift, are we locked into something given what you've just said? If they do, we have an ability to change our decision like every 6 months, every year, or is this a 10-year thing? Or how?
This is public markets. We can be in and out of it on 30 days' notice.
Okay.
Yeah, they're going to come in and talk. I had this question, but you can answer it for me. On page 11 of their report, would you go there?
Tell them they don't have to spend so much money on their reports.
It shows the difference over absolute return and stocks plus at the 10-year, 5-year, 3-year, 2-year, and 1-year. Now, it looks great at the 10-year, 5-year, 3-year, 2-year, but at the 1-year, it shows that it's a very, very slight, only 4 basis points was earned. What is going on in the economy that has brought that about in the last year? And my question is that something to worry about, or do you think the long-term effects override that?
Yeah, they can certainly address what's happened in the past year. I mean, anything shorter than 5 years is not helpful for me in terms of planning how to think about the fee structures, in terms of planning how to think about the excess return. Is there something to be concerned about in the market? Oh, yeah. There's always something to be concerned about in the market. But we can have them isolate the past year for you, Jerry. It's been a tough – have been really challenged over the past year.
But it's not making a switch. You don't think it's making a complete switch where this investment process will then be coming out of favor?
Well,
it's in favor right now.
My biggest concern in the fixed income markets today is what happens in a rising rate environment. And we've had a panel discussion here.
Yeah.
To the extent that we want something that mitigates the impact or has the potential to mitigate the impact of a rising rate environment, where when rates rise, the price of the bond gets marked down because you're not as willing to pay for an old bond with a lower coupon as you are for a new bond with a higher coupon. One of the ways you can mitigate that is going on negative duration. So this one has more, the stock plus absolute return has a larger tool set to mitigate what I fear might happen in the fixed income market in the intermediate term.
All right. I understand.
You can almost think of that 90% as being invested in their unconstrained bond fund. It's very similar to that.
Okay. Thank you.
And you'll be right on top of it, right?
trust me, we're on top of PIMCO. There's no shortage of conversations there.
Okay, are we ready for PIMCO?
Did they bring this to us, or did you see this?
We were down there. It was a conversation. I don't remember if Jerry or John brought it up, but basically it was I brought up, are we missing anything in the guidelines? Then the conversation led to this point.
I like that better than them coming trying to.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Philosophically, we like this kind of an approach. We think it's a good idea. And we did something similar with Intech some years back, moved you to a more aggressive product. So this is consistent with our.
Well, I appreciate that. I'd rather have this come to us from our folks.
We basically said when we were down there, you guys aren't cutting it. What else have you got? We like the store. Show us what else you got on the shelf. Because this product isn't doing it. And they got the message. And they said, well, we have this absolute return. And my first thought was, we didn't know about it before.
Right.
Okay, but, you know, we asked. That's all right. They didn't try and defend Stocks Plus.
Good group. You ready for it?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning.
Stephanie, you brought some new people with you.
I did, yes. Yeah. So thank you for having us here this morning and for your consideration of broadening the investment strategy opportunity set for your Stocks Plus portfolio. I'm joined here today by Sabrina Callen. She's a managing director at PIMCO, and she heads the product specialist group for the Stocks Plus suite of strategies. And to her right is Sasha Talcutt, my new partner in with responsibility for the relationship that PIMCO has with Cicero. So nice to introduce them to you all. Just as background, the consideration for this expansion of investment parameters was prompted by a discussion we had with Jerry Holcomb and John Phillips when they were in our office in March, as well as ongoing conversations with your CIO, Tim Price. In terms of seeking a way to target and potentially achieve higher excess return versus the S&P 500 for what we call the Stocks Plus strategy. We know that Milliman has done a lot of work for you in terms of researching the strategy and speaking with you about the potential change. So from you, we wanted to know, would you like us to do a brief overview of the strategy, or would you rather just ask us questions? How would you like to use your time?
I think we generally understand the strategy is basically expanding the non-collateral balance of the investment to longer duration, a little more exotic, so to speak, investment areas. Mm-hmm. Maybe just a general idea on the theory or the expectation of this particular strategy.
Sure. Okay.
And can I add one? And I know how many other entities have taken advantage or are involved in this with your organization?
Sure. Yeah. So I'll tackle that first, and then I think we can jump right into a couple of pages to highlight here to highlight the key differences. In terms of our overall Stocks Plus suite, what they have in common is all of these strategies are replicating an equity index using futures or total return swaps. The difference is really how the collateral is managed, how the cash that's not required in order to get the equity exposure is managed. We have seen a shift in clients adopting the higher return potential strategy versus the traditional strategy over the past 5 years. So we have a page in the book in the additional information section, page 20, which shows that at the end of 2008, 83% of our assets in this strategy were in the traditional Stocks Plus. And by traditional, I mean that the investment portfolio had a maximum duration of 1 year, so a short-term fixed income investment strategy. At the end of last year, the traditional Stocks Plus made up only 20% of the assets. If you add up kind of these different components, that means that about 63% of the assets are now in the Stocks Plus absolute return style strategy that we're talking to you about today.
And what do you attribute that to? Do you attribute that to the interest rate environment? Do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think broadly what we've seen as a trend is an expectation of lower overall returns across all asset classes, which means that people are increasingly interested in achieving higher excess returns relative to the index. So if your expectation for stock market returns, say, are 5 to 6% instead of 8 to 10%, that extra 200 or 300 basis points or 2 to 3% of excess return is such a bigger percent of your expected return. So it's really consistent with just an overall desire to try and increase your returns as much as you can. Now, what's interesting about this strategy, and we can point to some pages in here, is you're not significantly increasing the overall risk of the portfolio. That is on page 12 in your book. The overall risk of this strategy, the absolute return version, is still really driven by the risk of the equity market. The horizontal line here, the x-axis, shows the volatility over a three-year period. The S&P 500 index has volatility over this period of about 12.5%. The Stocks Plus strategy that we currently manage has volatility about 13%, and the Stocks Plus Absolute is at about 14%. So it's a small incremental increase due to the more latitude that we have in the fixed income investment portfolio.
Okay.
Now, going back to the what's really different or what really drives this excess return potential, I'll turn it to Sabrina.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I just would reiterate what Stephanie said about the drivers of people moving from the enhanced index version of Stocks Plus into the version that's intended to provide higher excess return. It just really, we think, allows people to capitalize on their equity risk budget to a greater degree, which we think is particularly important in the coming environment where we're going to need equities to work harder for us. If the beta return is going to be lower, the risk is still going to be similar. Capturing more meaningful excess return on top of the equity market is arguably a lot more important. And with this strategy, if you step back and think about the active risk and the strategy, moving from a 0 to 1 year duration, relatively risk constrained alpha engine, if you will, or source of excess return, versus the money market cost we pay to gain the equity exposure, to a portfolio that has a much broader opportunity set, a much greater degree of active management discretion, and on average over time, a much higher incremental yield versus money markets that provides a nice tailwind for performance, allows you to a greater degree to capitalize on your equity horizon. Right? From the standpoint of an equity investor, the combination of 100% equity risk with some moderate additional degree of fixed income risk, if anything, increases your overall diversification within the portfolio. Higher tracking error, but as Stephanie said, not materially higher risk over time. If anything, on the downside, you actually have a greater cushion. Because you have that greater excess return potential. And so that's really resonating. But in terms of the differences within Stocks Plus, we're actively managing the interest rate exposure between a 0 to 1 year range, with Stocks Plus Absolute Return actively managing that interest rate exposure with a -3 to +8 year range. Also, a lot more degrees of freedom, partially because of the broader duration range, but also with respect to the guidelines to invest globally where we see value with the traditional Stocks Plus strategy and the enhanced index version. We do have a limit on non-US exposure with the broader discretion version. We really are, in effect, looking to our portfolio management team to determine where to be when across the global fixed income market, based on where we see value, based on where we see risk, and of course expecting them not to invest where they see risk that we don't think we'll be rewarded for over the long term. Yes?
What are the top two reasons, in your mind, to stay in Stocks Plus?
Versus Stocks Plus Absolute Return?
Yes. Give me the top two reasons.
I think the number one reason would be if you have sensitivity to tracking error versus the benchmark. In other words, the excess return is going to be more variable with Stocks Plus AR than it is with regular Stocks Plus. Now, the average excess return should be much higher, but you will have a greater degree of variability. So if there was tracking error sensitivity, that would be one. That would be one consideration.
And what's the next best argument?
The fees are higher.
There you go.
Yeah.
Slightly higher fees, that I guess. But I mean, really, in terms of capitalizing on both your equity time horizon, your equity risk budget, and on PIMCO's breadth and depth of active management skill, we think that this is a move that makes sense. Again, the downside risk we don't see as higher, some incremental higher tracking error, and at the margin, maybe a little higher volatility. But in terms of use of your risk budget, in terms of helping you achieve your return targets, we are fully supportive of the proposal. And that's, again, something we're seeing a number of our clients look to do, and a number of them have done.
Okay, thank you.
Sabrina, I've got a question. On page 11, I posed this earlier to our staff. It's clear that on the TAN-5 two-year period, that absolute return did much better than stocks plus. But on the one-year return, I mean, 4 basis points, what do you attribute to this last year? And my next question is do you think it will continue, or do you think that it's going to do as it's been doing the past 10 years?
We think that it will do prospectively similar to what it's done over the last 10 years. We'd expect generally to deliver excess returns in the 2 to 4% range with stocks plus absolute return prospectively. So I think similar to the long-term averages, specific to the last 12 months, although I should note that the year-to-date number is actually north of 1% after fees for stocks plus AR, but specific to the last 12 months, that is really very specifically associated with the unexpected increase in interest rates that happened really in May and June of last year, combined with the fact that PIMCO did not anticipate that increase in interest rates. Now, we didn't have an 8-year duration in stocks plus absolute return, just to be clear, but we did have positive duration exposure, I think in the 2 to 3 year range when that increase happened. It was fairly significant. At the same time, given the underlying macroeconomic considerations, some uncertainty in the marketplace, we had risk exposure generally very low across our portfolios at PIMCO, and so you had less of a cushion, if you will, against that short-term increase in interest rates. But when we look at the opportunity set to add value versus cash globally, you know, we would view the last 12 months certainly as atypical, and we'd expect more generally to deliver that 2 to 4% excess return per annum on average.
Yeah, just so you have the numbers, we should have included them in the book. Year to date through May 31st, on an after fees basis, the stocks plus absolute return composite returned 6.1%. The stocks plus portfolio we currently manage for Cicera returned 5.5%, and the S&P 500 returned 5%.
What did the S&P return?
5%.
I would just add another way to look at this issue about what we see prospectively is to look at page 10. Page 10 shows you is basically the carry of the different portfolios. So if nothing were to happen in the market in terms of interest rate changes or in terms of changes in corporate bond spreads, this is the number that we would expect to earn over the index. So you can see on the left the stocks plus AR prospective account, we would expect to earn around 3.5%, 3.6% over the index, versus the stocks plus portfolio, we expect to earn around 1% over the index.
And so again, that's that greater tailwind, which is one of the unique benefits inherent in both strategies, but obviously to a much more significant degree in stocks plus absolute return.
Jerry?
Don't mean to throw you a curve, but I'm about to. Probably Melman will be throwing a curve too, and Tim as well. If you look at briefly at page 20, the leakage, if you will, from stocks plus over that period of time has been pretty dramatic, and the migration has been, you know, stocks plus AR is clearly there, but it seems to be that it's even greater transition to something called fundamental index plus AR. Mm-hmm. So even more of your client base has selected that when they have bailed out of stocks plus. Could you answer that, and when you do, try and connect it with page 10, give us an idea of what the index, fundamental index plus AR chart would look like compared to those two?
Let me jump in front of you to explain why we're not looking at that today. Collateral pool is the same, and what we're talking about here is a changing collateral pool. Fundamental index plus doesn't use S&P 500 features, it uses another equity index. I didn't want muddy the water between two different topics today, that's all. So I really wanted to focus today's discussion on, do we want to change that collateral pool? changing the beta exposure to futures exposure to something other than S&P 500 future tends to bleed back a little bit to our asset allocation and is more of a macro consideration. It's something that's easy to change down the road, but getting the board's read on the collateral pool, to me, was a bigger operational issue today, and that's why we're looking at just the stocks plus AR today.
And when I cited 63% in the absolute return strategies, it's adding the stocks plus AR and the fundamental index plus AR as, again, the investment, the fixed income investment strategy is the same for both of those.
And so referencing page 10 specifically, that would look the same in terms of that total carry or that yield advantage tailwind. The difference is it's a different equity exposure, not the S&P, it's the fundamental index equity exposure.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to describe the fundamental equity index relative to the S&P in a fairly simple way?
Absolutely. So just at a high level, the difference between the S&P 500 and the fundamental index exposure that we're gaining in fundamental index plus AR is that the S&P selects the stocks for the index based on market capitalization, which of course is the way we should and do think about the stock market, right? The fundamental index departs from a market capitalization weighted approach to selecting stocks for the index, and rather selects stocks from the index for the index based on accounting metrics associated with the companies. So cash flow, sales, dividend, and book value, and measures a company's size based on each of those four accounting metrics. And so what it does effectively is de-link stock price from the weight that a stock has within the overall equity index. And what you tend to see over time with this admittedly non-traditional approach to equity indexing, what people refer to in the marketplace oftentimes these days as a smart beta approach, is you in effect are, by delinking price from index weight, you tend to pick up some additional structural return over time because of the fact that capitalization-weighted indexes sort of automatically overweight overpriced stocks, right? So if every stock in the stock market is not priced at its fair value at every moment in time, any stock that's overpriced by definition will be overweighted in a cap-weighted index because of the fact that weights are determined by price times shares outstanding, and every stock that is undervalued relative to its fair value will be underweighted. And so by breaking that link between price and index weight, you tend to pick up some extra return over time versus cap-weighted indices. So it's an alternative indexation approach.
So Apple would have probably Apple is a good example, would have a higher proportion of the S&P 500 than it would the fundamental.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Great question, John. That was really interesting.
Yeah. A very eloquent explanation. Who makes the determination as to these fundamentals? Because some of them are objective, but some of them seem to be somewhat subjective.
So we work with research affiliates, Rob Arnott and team, and we have been working with them since 2005. They are the sub-advisor to the fundamental index plus approaches. So this is it's an enhanced version of what's referred to as RAFI, if you may have seen that mentioned in the financial press, the Research Affiliates Fundamental Index.
Okay.
And it's a purely quantitative approach.
Okay. No subjectivity.
No subjectivity.
Okay. Any other questions? No.
There was a question. Have you ever gone to negative duration?
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Thank you.
We have gone close to negative duration and slightly negative in the Stocks Plus AR product suite. yes. And certainly, while that's not a place we would expect to sit for some length of time, if we thought that interest rate rises were imminent, we probably will have negative duration in that situation.
And how would you do that?
Most commonly using treasury futures or other liquid instruments like that allow us to quickly adjust our interest rate exposure.
With regards to fees, the fixed fees are a two-stage fee with regards to this. Any possibility of combining our total investments, or considering our total investments with PIMCO in affecting the fee break?
We would take that to our fee group. I don't know if we have precedent for that. Do you know, Sabrina, if we combine total return assets with Stocks Plus assets?
We could certainly look at it and absolutely take that to the fee group. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Top closer. You have to go back in. You have to talk to the manager.
Yes.
It's like, yeah. I've been to those auto dealers.
Okay, any other questions? Well, thank you very much.
That was really
helpful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your long-term investment in many of our strategies, and we appreciate your time this morning and thinking about this option.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just a 5 minute.
Okay. Take a quick 5 minute bathroom break. Be back by 10:45.